It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Sunday, March 26th, 2023. I'm Jessica Rosenthal. What seemed possible this past week did not occur, but may happen this coming week, as legal investigations ramp up around the former president. An indictment out of New York may be imminent, but some Republicans are crying foul.
And really, from our perspective, what we want to know is what's behind this and what is motivating this.
I'm Kevin Cork. Old foes forming a new partnership. Despite generations of suspicion, competition, and even war, China and Russia now find themselves sharing much more than a long border. They share a keen interest in unseating the U.S. as the world's preeminent superpower.
Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping, they see the world in the same terms. They identify the same adversary, which is the United States, and so they see that their interests coincide.
This is the Fox News Rundown from Washington. Maybe not all eyes, but a lot of eyes this week were on the criminal courthouse in Manhattan, as sources told media outlets, including Fox, that a grand jury might indict President Trump. Ahead of this, an attorney for Trump said the district attorney, Alvin Bragg, had invited the former president to testify to the grand jury. Then the former president himself said he expected to be indicted this past Tuesday. But the indictment didn't materialize. Trump himself said the DA's office was in disarray, in his opinion. But there were reports an additional witness might testify, so all the confusion could just be scheduling. Either way, during all of this, the House Judiciary Committee Chairman, Ohio Republican Jim Jordan, sent a letter to Bragg demanding he testify to them about, quote, his unprecedented abuse of prosecutorial authority. Jordan's letter notes that Trump is the leading Republican candidate for president in 2024. The investigation of all this stems from hush money payments Trump made to a former adult film star, Stormy Daniels, who'd alleged she had an affair with then-presidential candidate Donald Trump 10 years prior. Trump's attorney, Michael Cohen, paid Daniels, and he said Trump reimbursed him. For that, Cohen ended up pleading guilty to a campaign finance charge. Federal prosecutors did not charge the former president even after he left office. A state indictment against Trump here wouldn't likely involve federal campaign finance rules, but they could involve filing a false business record or attempting to cover up tax-related crimes. On Wednesday, the grand jury was apparently going to hear from another witness, but sources told Fox News Digital their grand jury meeting was canceled. Thursday, the grand jury apparently met, but it wasn't clear what case they were considering. And Friday, they didn't meet. They are scheduled to meet again Monday.
I believe this letter is very important.
Laura Lee is a Florida Republican congresswoman on the House Judiciary Committee and a former judge.
And really, from our perspective, what we want to know is what's behind this and what is motivating this. You know, we know that this area of inquiry, first off, is years old and that it's already been looked at and passed over and rejected by the U.S. Attorney's Office, the FEC. So the fact that this district attorney would now, in 2023, be trying to resuscitate something that has already been rejected as a legal theory is very concerning. And so, you know, what we want to know in Congress is what's going on here and essentially get to the bottom of whether this is political motivation.
Yeah, the letter says from the Judiciary Committee to District Attorney Bragg, it posits the possibility that he's abusing his prosecutorial authority. I think I'm quoting and pursuing this, putting evidence on this before grand jury is this abuse. What's your specific concern on that front, that this is abuse of power? Is it the length of time that's passed? I mean, what's behind that particular allegation of abuse of power?
Well, look, he has certain legal authority and to be investigating things where there is cause to believe a crime has occurred. So I think this begins with the question of, is there any reasonable belief that there's a crime to be investigated here? And given the length of time that has passed, the typical scope of a state prosecutor and the other entities who have already looked at this and decided that it wasn't worth pursuing, it's very questionable why he would be doing this and why he would be doing it now. So, you know, one of the overall principles and things that we're really trying to bring in this Congress is the idea of transparency and accountability, that we don't want decisions to be made in the dark that are affecting the American people. And in this case, of course, affecting a presidential candidate and former president. You know, this is the kind, I will tell you, I actually served as a federal prosecutor for many years, and I'm a former judge from Florida. And you know, the decision to create a public spectacle of this nature around, somebody who is a former president and a presidential candidate, is something that should be undertaken with the most seriousness. And it just doesn't look like that's happening here. So, you know, I think there are a lot of questions around timing, motivation, why this is happening. And then as an entirely separate subject, it really isn't about the inquiry of the Judiciary Committee, but, you know, what this district attorney is doing and not doing with his time from a general community safety standpoint is simply inexplicable.
Because you're a judge, I do want to drill down a little bit, or you were a judge. I'm reading some of these legal experts, right? And they're saying, okay, this isn't classified documents. It's not about the 2020 election. It may seem minor, but that it is a potential felony to lie regarding falsifying records that maybe even resulted in covering up some tax fraud. As this was initially recorded, right, as a legal fee payment that was made to attorney Michael Cohen when he was reimbursed for giving these hush money payments. We know he pled to a campaign finance violation, but a state prosecutor wouldn't pursue that narrative or that line of inquiry. But if Cohen says Trump told me to do this, why shouldn't that be investigated, or should it have been investigated earlier?
Well, yes. So to begin with, of course, any investigation, any criminal prosecution is best done contemporaneously, best done close in time to when an alleged incident occurred. That's when you'll be able to find the most evidence, the most witnesses. That's the way our process is supposed to work. But one thing that's really important to remember about this case is that the star witness here, the case is really predicated upon a convicted perjurer. And this is something that I will say in all my years as a prosecutor, there's simply not a scenario where you want the foundation of your case to be somebody who has a demonstrated history of having committed perjury, because how can you then, with any good faith, rely upon today's representations if we know in the past there have been representations that were false? So, you know, these are the questions that we want answers to. And that's really where, when we send letters from Congress, we send letters from the Judiciary Committee, that is us asking for more information. We want to know. And if the district attorney thinks that he has a good explanation, hey, he wants to come in and explain to us, look, this isn't political. You know, here's what I see, and here's my theory of the case, and here's why I'm doing this in 2023. Well, then, you know, we'll hear what he has to say. But from the outside looking in, from the perspective of us over here, and I suspect of many American people, there's a lot of explaining to do.
DA Bragg's office, as you know, sent a letter back saying Chairman Jordan's requests are an unlawful incursion into New York's sovereignty, and that the kind of information the committee is seeking is confidential. This is a grand jury. And the letter also says, if you want to meet, we'll meet with you, Republicans, to determine if there's a legitimate legislative purpose they can accommodate here. What do you make of DA Bragg's response, and would you take him up on that meeting?
Well, listen, this will be something that Chairman Jim Jordan, Chairman Steil, Chairman Comer, you know, all of whom were involved in the drafting of the letter, they will, I'm sure, take a look at his response, and they will make a decision together along with others in the House about how they want to proceed, how they want to respond to his specific position there, and we'll go from there. And the rest of us, the rest of the House, the rest of the committee members certainly stand ready to participate in any hearings or review any documents that come along as a result of that conversation.
And just a couple more for you. The former president has not yet been indicted. It remains to be seen. If he is not, would you still want to speak to the district attorney just about the investigation? Or would you feel, okay, a grand jury just took care of those concerns?
Well, you know, I think that that's a great question. And there, too, I think that's something that we really have to take a look at internally, you know, with the committee chairman, the members of the committee, you know, is this still an area, an avenue of inquiry that we want to pursue? But it's entirely possible that a grand jury, even if impaneled, can look at this evidence, can look at the situation and decide not to return an indictment. Until that happens, it absolutely is still a possibility that this takes another course.
If the grand jury in Fulton County, Georgia, indicts former President Trump over allegations of election interference, or the former president's indicted by federal prosecutors over the handling of classified documents, would you expect this committee, this Judiciary Committee, to have the same reaction and want to hear from others involved, maybe Fulton County DA Fannie Willis in Georgia or the Attorney General himself of the DOJ?
Well, there are a couple of things about D.A. Bragg's decision that I think really jump off the page. And, you know, one goes back to the discussion we were having about timing, that, you know, he is going back to a fact scenario that is alleged to have happened years ago. Yet this investigation doesn't come up until after Donald Trump declares he's going to run for president again. So one of the things that I think really caught the attention of those of us in Congress was that timing, and that the timing just doesn't in the ordinary course of criminal proceedings, that's not what would happen. That you have a couple other agencies that typically would have taken principal responsibility for this type of allegation anyway, that pass it over and decide not to pursue it. And then all these years later, someone else comes along and tries to resurrect it. That's one of the things that was really unique here and that I think brought it up for interest and inquiry by Congress is that just projects the notion of improper bias or animus or political motivation, that we'd find this stale allegation and bring it up now. So that's something that I think was an important part of making a congressional inquiry to try to get to the bottom of that political interference and animus that would be inappropriate. So
yeah.
Anything else, I think we'd have to take it as it comes and see if there's a proper role or not a proper role for Congress to be engaged.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like in this particular case, you feel like there's a role for federal congressional oversight, even though this is a state matter. You're saying that sort of oversight would not necessarily apply, that in this case you find it to be unique, that the Judiciary Committee at a federal level would find reason to have such oversight over a state prosecutor.
Correct. This is a very fact-specific case because of the nature of the allegations, the age of the allegations, the fact that they've been rejected numerous times before, and that even this DA didn't decide to pursue this course until after Donald Trump declared he was a candidate for the presidency again. So you know, again, this is the beginning of a conversation. And if the DA wants to come in and provide us with information about his perspective, his timing, what's going on, you know, but these are the types of questions that we need answered and that the American people want to see answered.
Congresswoman Laura Lee of Florida, thank you so much for joining us.
It was my pleasure.
I'm Emily Campagno, host of the Fox True Crime Podcast. January 26th, 1988 was a cold and suspiciously quiet night at the Indianapolis Police Department, but the frigid night took a chilling turn with news of a triple homicide. This week, I'm joined by retired Sergeant Judd Green for a look back at this savage case. Available now on Apple, Spotify, and FoxNewsPodcast.com.
It's been said that theirs is less of a partnership than it's a marriage of convenience. But by any definition, increased cooperation between Beijing and Moscow is a harrowing prospect for the ongoing war in Ukraine, and for that matter, for the future of the West. Many analysts say that their leaders are making moves to strengthen each other while weakening their adversaries.
Historically, China and Russia have been adversaries.
Senior fellow at the Gatestone Institute and author of the best-selling book, The Coming Collapse of China, Gordon Chang, explains.
Two very large states just abutting each other. When we go back to not too distant past, we've seen the Soviet and Chinese armies clash. But they did settle their border disputes around the turn of the century. They finally demarcated their line. And since that time, they've actually been getting closer together. Now, Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping, the two leaders, they see the world in the same terms. They identify the same adversary, which is the United States. And so they see that their interests coincide. And yes, there are a lot of smart people in Washington and New York who say that long term, China and Russia will not form an enduring partnership. And I think that they are right. But the point is, we Americans don't care about China and Russia in the 2050s and the 2060s. We care about what they're doing now. And what they're doing now is cooperating, military drills, all the rest of it, with the purpose of taking down the existing international order, which, by the way, Kevin, has been in place since 1648.
Let me unpack a little bit of what you just said. Understanding that there is this complicated history, and yet there appears now, especially between the two leaders, this sort of this idea that, look, it's all about taking down the United States. And I'm not suggesting that there's going to be a war necessarily between, say, China and the U.S. or between Russia and the U.S., but I do think they're trying to shift the world order as we've known it, this sort of uniparty of power being the United States. Is that fair to say, Gordon?
I think it certainly is fair to say. We've had an international system which has been led by the United States. And the reason is that the system that the U.S. created was one which benefited all that participated. So it is buy-in. And so it's not, in a sense, a unipolar world, as the Chinese would like to say it. It is a world where everybody thinks they have a stake in it. Now, China and Russia want to dominate things. Putin's belief is that he must annex neighbors to reconstitute the Russian Empire. Xi Jinping wants to annex the world in the near parts of the solar system. And yes, that does sound ludicrous, but that's really what they're doing. If we look at this in the long term, yes, those two ambitions conflict, but not now, because they believe that they can get rid of the United States. They will be safer as regimes, and then they can quarrel among themselves in the future. So we have to look at this. This is not something where we can separate Russia from China with persuasion, with enticement, with engagement. We're going to have to defeat one and then defeat the other. Now, I know Americans don't want to hear that, but the point is these regimes are dedicated to the destruction of the United States, and you just can't cooperate with regimes that have that worldview.
There are critics, Gordon, who have suggested that it is weak leadership here at home in Washington, particularly at the very top, that has actually initiated this movement together. And maybe not initiated it, but certainly seems to have driven what, at least in parts of history, have been competing interests into one really dangerous cooperation abroad. How do you assess that criticism, that it's the leadership here at home that's really driven these two historic foes closer together?
I think in the long term, it was never really possible to keep Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping apart. But what we have seen during the Biden administration are policies that have led to an extremely dangerous situation. I believe the most dangerous in history. What occurred is Biden, first of all, was the author of that catastrophic withdrawal from Afghanistan. That confirmed in the minds of both Putin and Xi that the United States was in terminal decline and that they then could then do what they want with impunity. And that's exactly what occurred on February 24th of last year when Vladimir Putin, facing a far superior foe, actually said, "I don't care, I'm invading Ukraine." If we go back to 2021, the United States, the 27 nations of the European Union, and Great Britain, which was the coalition facing Vladimir Putin, had an economy that was 25.1 times larger than Russia's. But Russia didn't care. Because Putin felt that this was a matter of political will, of determination, and of strength, and they didn't see that in their adversaries. So that's why we have the war in Ukraine. And remember, Biden had some very curious comments in the run-up to the war, which I think led Putin to confirmed in his mind that he could invade. If you remember Biden saying, well, you know, maybe a minor incursion wouldn't be such a big deal. We now learned it is a big deal, as we have seen months of war in Ukraine with the death and with the atrocities. So this is now one of those existential crises for the international system. And it's because President Biden, through extremely disadvantageous, misguided, disastrous policies, have allowed bad actors to roam free.
What kind of cooperation are we talking about between Russia and China, Gordon? I know there's some economic, I think, primarily is the cooperation I've been reading much about. Is that the basis for their partnership, or is it broader than that?
I think it's broader than that, Kevin. Certainly there's economic cooperation. China, through elevated commodity purchases, has effectively financed Russia's war effort in Ukraine. But Beijing has also opened up its financial system to Russian institutions that have been sanctioned. China has put its diplomats in the service of the Kremlin. Communist Party and Chinese central government propaganda outlets have been amplifying Russian disinformation. And China, from the very beginning of this war, has been providing lethal assistance to Russia for Ukraine. And so this support Beijing for Moscow is across the board. And one can argue that Russia would not be in the war right now. It would have already lost had it not been for Chinese assistance.
Ammunition in particular, I believe, has been going back and forth. I read an account, Gordon, that seemed to suggest we're talking large aircraft going from Beijing and other parts of China into Russia to help them with this war effort. Is that true?
Yes, that is true. There have been various reports that almost every day an AN-124, that's the world's largest cargo plane, takes ammunition and other high consumption rate items to Russia for use in the war. And this has been confirmed because Ukraine is reporting spent Chinese ammunition on the battlefield fired by the Russians at Ukrainian forces. There's also credible reporting that China's been selling drones to the Wagner Group. We've witnessed the downing of a Chinese, what they call the Alibaba drone. So Chinese equipment is showing up on the battlefield.
Let me ask you about the long-term circumstance for the U.S., because I think our listeners are looking for answers. What on earth do we do? What would you say? What were some of the steps that maybe, if you were in an advisory role, what might you say to, say, a Secretary of State or to a president, be thinking in these particular ways, or I would recommend we do these three steps? What does that look like to you, Gordon?
Well, the first step, and that's all-encompassing, is to fight this war to win. The Biden administration right now, to its credit, has supplied weapons to Ukraine to keep Ukraine in the battle. But they've not supplied weapons, and they've not supplied them fast enough to allow Ukraine to win. Now, many people will correctly say that forcing Russian forces out of Ukraine is extremely dangerous. And my reply is that's not a meaningful objection, because right now every course of action is extremely dangerous. But the most dangerous course of action of all is to continue with policies that have created this situation in the first place. So I'm not saying that there is any safe way out of this. There certainly is not. But if Ukraine were to win, I think that that would to go a long way to ensuring peace in East Asia, because that would convince Xi Jinping that the Western allies and their friends around the world formed a strong partnership that would oppose China as it had opposed Russia and was successful. But if Russia is allowed to keep Ukrainian territory, I think that that's essentially a green light to Xi Jinping to invade Taiwan, Japan, Philippines, India, maybe even take a swipe at us. So although we've gotten ourselves into this position, we have to acknowledge it. We've got to win in Ukraine. If we don't, we're going to be fighting around the world, not just Ukraine, not just East Asia, Middle East, North Africa, and perhaps elsewhere.
I want to ask you something about a comment that I heard you make in a previous broadcast, and I think it was instructive. You said, in some senses, we're already at war with China. And you mentioned fentanyl, I think a number of other things. Unpack that for the audience, if you would, Gordon. And I think that would go a long way toward explaining the true devastating nature of what we're facing here if we don't wake up and right quick.
China has a very different definition of war than we do. They've got the notion of unrestricted warfare. That's the title of a 1999 book by then two Chinese Air Force colonels. And unrestricted warfare means unrestricted warfare. It means any type of tactic that can be used to weaken or destroy an adversary. Now, China, in fact, declared a, quote, people's war on America. That was May 2019 by People's Daily, which is the most authoritative source in China. When People's Daily speaks, that's China speaking. And through that, we have seen a number of different methods of warfare. There's been propaganda warfare. There's been intimidation. But the one that you mentioned is something that we should focus on, and that is fentanyl. Fentanyl is designed and the precursors are manufactured in China. It is smuggled across our southern border. In China's near total surveillance state, the Communist Party knows of what the fentanyl gangs are doing and so therefore approves them. We also know that because China's diplomats have been supporting the fentanyl gangs. And the fentanyl gangs, they launder their proceeds through the Chinese state banking system. So when we have the numbers for last year, we will find that more than 80,000 Americans have been killed by doses of illegal Chinese fentanyl. And we should consider each one of those deaths a murder because the Communist Party wanted those Americans to die.
It is one of the most complicated periods in history that we're discussing. We could be looking at something akin to World War I. We could be looking at something significantly worse than World War II if we can't figure out a way to solve what is obviously an incredibly complicated problem that seems to be spreading. Gordon Chang, always a great time to have a conversation with you. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much, Kevin. I really appreciate it.
That'll do it for this week's Fox News Rundown from Washington. As the grand jury reconvenes next week, we'll be waiting on New York Attorney General Alvin Bragg's possible indictment of former President Donald Trump. And more high-profile congressional hearings will take place on Capitol Hill, including the former CEO of Starbucks, testifying before the Senate HELP Committee, chaired by Senator Bernie Sanders, after an aggressive bout of union busting. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm Kevin Cork from Washington.
Stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.